Listen to me. I want to tell you something.
Come closer.
Don't be
upset
and don't get emotional. Just get near me and pay attention, please.
Look.
In 5, 4, 3.
Omer Fast, talk show. On a TV show like Set, a tragic story is being told. On stage, there are a testimony and 6 listeners who in turn become storytellers. The same story is going to be told and repeated before an audience in the flesh who only knows the entire arc of the story, traveling from the first-hand account of the testimony to the improvised actors' dramatized versions.
I always think about having an audience. You know, of course, the piece that I make are, they don't take the presence of the audience for granted, and this is why they're very often, for example, cut, you know, in a way that an audience can come in and out, and they don't really have a beginning or an end. And so an audience that comes in at any point in a piece might make certain assumptions or might form an opinion about what they're seeing that is different than an audience that comes in, let's say, 5 or 10 minutes later. And it's very critical for me to work flexibly with this notion that an audience comes in and out, because, you know, in the art world, in the art venues, normally you don't have this kind of ritual that you have in a wonderful place like this, where, you know, the lights go off and you buy your ticket and you expect to engage with a piece for, let's say, 90 minutes. The piece that I'm showing here is a little bit different, because it was first a performance, and so I was invited to make work on a stage for an audience. And what I decided to do was to, the piece is called Talk Show, is to take the talk show format and to think about it as a live event for an audience. And so I had a guest who was invited to tell a story from her life, and this is a very tragic story. But she's telling it to an audience, and she's telling it to a performer, and both the performer and the audience do not know what the story is and who the guest is. But once they hear it, of course they do. Nevertheless, as when the guest finishes telling her story, another performer comes onto the stage. It's like a talk show, so you have 2 seats and a lighting and a kind of a set. And the performer who just heard the story for the first time repeats that story as much as possible for the 10 minutes that it took to tell the story in front of the audience. Just like this game of telephone or Chinese whispers or telephone arabe, or in the end, what the audience is able to see is a kind of a record of a tragic story that's kind of been taken for a ride and evolves and devolves until it becomes a kind of a collective recitation, and a fairly funny one at that. The important thing, I think, in a work, in order, first of all, not to be boring, is to immediately think about, okay, what is it that I'm hearing about the story? Because we hear it for the first time, and it takes about 10 minutes to hear. And, of course, the story, and Lisa Ramacci, who's the storyteller, you know, she does a good job of relaying the details, the specifics of the story, and this happened to her, and she lost her husband as a result. And so after 10 minutes, the question is, okay, what do you do with that? What do you do with a story like this? And what do you do in a live performance context where you have a notion that you have an audience and that you have about 60 minutes to fill? And so, of course, you need to come up with some kind of structure that relates to the original story, that takes this original story, but that exploits it in a way, and exploits it in a very transparent and in a very violent way, in a sense. And, you know, the kind of structure that I came up with, you know, maintains a memory, a remainder, as it were, of what that original story was, but begins to pull it apart. And it does it in a way in front, you know, live and in an improvised way in front of the audience. And so in the end, what you have is both a record of what has happened and where this story is being pulled to, and in a very sort of comedic way. And it's a grotesque in the end. What you see in the beginning is a kind of a confessional format that is very closely aligned with the television format, but someone's life story. But then through successive layers of storytelling, you have a sense that this story has been pulled apart and mediated and becomes essentially this grotesque in the end.
In the end, you may not even notice the difference.
Fairly interesting to think about is the creative, unpredictable, and controversial force underlying the information loss that occurs in the shift between the first-hand experience and its retellings. The result may be grotesque, much more ironic than a dramatic story should ever be. Nonetheless, they don't seem to break up the empathy link between the original story and the audience.
In the end of this particular story, this talk show, we have almost a cathartic end. And usually in my work, I try to resist catharsis. I try to, you know, I try to sabotage cathartic moment. But for this particular performance, I think as the story progresses and as it evolves and devolves simultaneously, what you have in the end is a kind of a cathartic moment, and a moment that allows us to remember both what has happened to this person, where we were 60 minutes ago, and when she returns to the stage, to have a sense, you know, she is back on stage with the performer at the very end of the performance, at the very end of the video, and you have a very strong sense of what this body, what this person has been through. And when she receives the story again and she laughs with the audience, you do have a sense that we've exploited her. We've exploited her story. We're terrible people for doing this. We laugh at what's happened, but we don't necessarily laugh at her. We laugh at how history and how evolution, a story takes a body, takes a information and warps it and corrupts it, but in a sense also liberates it and takes it on this particular journey. So I think there's some empathy in there. I hope there's some empathy in there in the end, yeah.
Unlike his previous works, wherein the position of the audience was constantly renegotiated, the rules of the contract between the viewer and the artist, between reality and fiction, never fully transparent. In talk show, the audience seems to collaborate with the artist and the testimony herself, holding a power it had never had before.
Sometimes on the streets, you imagine that you've been given a gift of terrible power.
The audience is more powerful because the audience knows more than the performers on stage. Again, because of the structure, because we have six performers, six actors in a green room. So they're behind the stage and they don't get to hear what's happening. By the time the second performer comes along, the audience already knows a lot more than that second performer. So in a sense, to go back to your notion of power and empathy, in a sense, the audience is omniscient in almost a kind of a divine way, the Olympians, the sort of the gods in a way. But in a sense, the audience is also powerless in a way to, of course, interfere with the process of evolution. So they're given this kind of omniscience. They're able to know what happened in the past a lot more than the performers on the stage do, but they're unable to interfere with the process of evolution, which is happening organically on the stage in front of them. Of course, they can react, and sometimes they hiss. And of course, we had a comedian who kind of whose role was as the Joker to pull the story apart, because my biggest horror was to have, you know, 60 minutes of the same tragedy over and over and over again, and becoming, you know, very claustrophobic and becoming a very terrible piece of just pure repetition. But of course, it's impossible because the story is 10 minutes long and no one can remember 10 minutes of story. Not even the most photographically gifted, acoustically gifted actor. I mean, of course, they're nervous also. They're in front of the audience and they know that the audience knows that they don't know what has happened beforehand. And so in the end, the audience is given the strange power of having omniscience but being completely impotent, being helpless to affect the course of history, to the course of story. It is only through their you know, hissing or their clapping or their laughing that they have any kind of response, but that is a very small response in compared to what the actor on the stage does.
From the audience to the stage, Fast asks the actors to improvise. He is not new to such a method. What is the importance of improvisation is easily said.
With regards to improvisation in this piece, talk show, it's very important. Of course, we're dealing with a real person's life, and there's fairly big ethical issues involved in making a piece like that. I thought that, first of all, the notion that improvisation is essential to the story has a great deal to do with offsetting the power and the kind of exploitation that's involved in this piece. It's obvious that the actors don't know the story and that they have to think really on the spot, in front of the audience, the fact that they have the power to change the story and the fact that they have to reinterpret someone's life and might do quite a nasty job of reinterpreting the story in a way that ethically is unacceptable, at least the notion that they're on the spot offsets some of that power, or at least makes it more transparent. So in terms of dynamics in the piece, the idea that they're improvising is essential to making the piece both transparent and more complicated, I think, in terms of its dynamics of power.
Before ending our conversation with regards to a line by Andrew Stephen Weiner that reads, "The event cannot be considered apart from its representations," we try to get more into the non-linear, multi-layered temporality that Fast's work deals with, as if to say, haventhood is not only defined by occurrence in time. Omer Fast is pretty conscious about that.
I think it depends on the piece. A piece, an earlier piece that it's called Spielberg's List, it already finds in the real world a kind of a ready-made for what I'm interested in. In other words, there is the historical event, which is what happened in Krakow in the 40s, in the late 30s and 40s. And then, of course, there is the, let's say, filmic, cinematic interpretation of what's happened there that was made and shot in 91 by Spielberg on location on the set. And, you know, when I came in 10 years after the film was made, what I was able to do is to bring both of these events into play. And these events are already interconnected. And very often on the ground, it's very difficult to find where one event begins and one ends. That doesn't mean, of course, that there is no history, that we have a responsibility to write history. But as an artist, what I'm interested in is the points, these points of contamination, the point at which, for example, a film set that was built right on the historical site and never fully dismantled becomes topographically mixed with the kind of historical site. And for many tourists who come and visit this particular site, they're very interested in seeing both the historical sites and to get the historical information, but they're also very curious about the film, what is here a set and what is a site and whatnot. So in that particular piece, this was, you know, the two things were ready-made. I just brought them together and I interviewed the extras, the people who participated in the film as figures on the side, and I asked them questions in and out of character. You know, I asked them questions about what they were doing on the set, and of course in their response you immediately have echoes from the past. In other works, I have to be responsible for the, let's say, interpretation or the representation or the recreation of the event. And these are more appropriate to works that begin with an interview, for example, where they include the story, just like in talk show. You have a sense of historical artifact, as in someone, a witness, telling a story. And of course, there's problems involved in that, and of course, it's complicated and whatnot. But nevertheless, it is a real person telling a real story from his or her life. It's history, in a sense. What the piece then tries to do is to introduce various layers that come into the representation of the story, that points at which the story is, for example, contaminated, or the way that the story can be pulled apart, or different things that are suppressed in the story, different ways to think about the story outside of the strict sort of linearity of its telling, of its happening. Yeah? You know, as an artist, my role is to respond, in a sense. You know, my role is not to act as a kind of, this is not vérité, this is not, we don't have those fantasies, I don't think, anymore, of trying to be the pure vessels that transmit something from the real world and show it in front of an audience. I think the audience now is very much aware of all the whole apparatus, the whole mechanism that comes into play, and all the contaminants that are at stake. What's important is to, for me, is always to try to have my cake and eat it too, to try to tell the story, to try to present a little bit of history, but also to show that this little bit of history is not independent of its representation and not independent of all the contaminants that, you know, come into effect when it's told. Because otherwise, you know, an event, it's just like this, you know, silly thing of the tree falling in the forest. If no one is there, the tree has fallen, of course, but no one's heard it. It didn't happen. Yeah, but the moment that it happens, the moment there's somebody who drives by, sees the tree falling and tells, you know, his girlfriend who's in the car with him, look, the tree's fallen, but she hasn't seen it. He has to describe this to her, and she might tell it to her boyfriend a little bit later on. And before we know it, we're in a very complicated love triangle and we're outside of the car and we're somewhere in a different scene, in a different story. And these are the things that I you know, like to think about, the kind of the interconnectedness of these things, but inevitability always referencing that kind of, you know, that ground zero, that point of origin, that point at which, you know, at least in a linear sense, history always pulls us to.
This interview was recorded on the occasion of Lo Schermo dell'Arte Film Festival, Firenze. It's produced by Radio Papesse. radiopapesse.org.